Hi, you're listening to The Music Post. I'm Sam Post. And before I get to today's show, I wanted to let you know that I'm planning on branching out a little bit in the next few weeks and bring you some episodes not just about music itself, like I usually do, but about music and science and the, I guess, interesting ways that they intersect. And for those who don't know me, I have a background not just in music, but in the sciences as well, and I'm hoping these ideas that I have swirling around in my head will be the kinds of things that maybe you've wondered about music, and maybe some other things that you never knew to wonder about, but will find interesting too. So stay tuned for those. As for today, I'm continuing in the what makes box music great and unique theme that I've got going on a little bit here on the podcast. And you know, for me, I think this is also kind of a scientific question, although very few people seem to treat it that way. And clearly it's a question for which a full explanation evades the scope of this podcasts, as ambitious as I may be, and a full answer would be immensely complicated, much too complicated for me to give here, and probably too complicated for anyone to answer fully, but it still bothers me how consistently people evade this question entirely when they're asked about it. So for instance, if you Google what makes box music so great, and don't worry, that's not the only thing I did, though always a start. The second hit is this interview from The Guardian of a bunch of really noteworthy people trying to answer this question, but their answers don't really say anything about the music itself, any music that is. They're more along the lines of, oh, box music is so comforting, or it's inspiring, it's about the love of God, not just the love between people, which is all very well, but not much in the way of true explanation. And even worse, I've been looking through a couple books. I found this book that's presented as a listener's guide to Bach for the layperson, kind of what I'm trying to do here. Bacchanalia by Edward Altshuler. And I saw that Stephen Jay Gould, who, you know, this real scientist, wrote a glowing foreword to this book, so I thought, well, this has to be decent. And I turned to the chapter called Bach's Big Secret, which had this very helpful three-step guide to Bach's creative process. And the three steps were, are you ready? One, come up with an excellent theme. Two, fill the music with that theme. And three, carefully plan the overall structure of a piece. Pretty fantastic, right? You know, I should publish a theory of how people write great books. Step one would be come up with an awesome idea for a book. Step two, write an awesome book. Obviously, I jest. This is a horrible, horrible explanation of how Bach wrote his music and what distinguishes it, because it's not an explanation at all. And, you know, I understand that in the humanities, lots of times, these questions aren't prone to real, true-false explanations, and anything I offer you here is always very partial in nature as well, but this particular question strikes me as one that's not entirely subjective and doesn't need a really, truly vague answer. You know, we can take steps toward really answering it, or at least we should try. Okay, for now, my rant is done. Let's hear some music, and then I'll tell you how, again, it can lead us maybe a little bit closer to this question of why box music, why it is unique about it, what is awesome about it. So let's listen to the 2- and 3-part inventions in C major by Bach, with me playing the piano. Thank you. You haven't listened before, or to remind you in case you have, my very quick explanation on just one level why this music is great, why it's unique, is this combination of these recognizable elements with these really unpredictable surprises and changes, and how those two combine in unpredictable ways. And these short pieces are so great for getting acquainted with this idea in short, easily digestible chunks. So listen first to the main theme of the first piece, which breaks down into two really simple parts, these four rising notes, and then these two broken thirds all together. And throughout the piece, you heard it lots of times also upside down this way. Like in most of Bach's music, you hear that idea traded back and forth between the hands. Toward the beginning, we have this sequence, this section, where the same music happens three times in a row, only lower each time. We've got the main theme first in inverted in the soprano voice, upside down. And the very first part of the theme in the left-hand voice, only the rising four notes, and played half as fast in the left hand. So all together, lower, time. Only that's actually not what happens. When the right hand is playing the fourth, the last iteration of the sequence, the left hand breaks and keeps rising up to this provocative suspended note. Here's how it sounds. Both hands, this time, kind of gives us a surprise, rising farther and extending this phrase past where we might expect. Keep going up, and then finally coming to a cadence. Skipping ahead, there's this section that has this very different feeling where things come to this, a bit of a standstill. There's this slower dialogue between the hands, and it's a great illustration of these moments in Bach where a whole group of notes that give us this recognizable idea, this theme that we've heard already, are really standing in structurally for something much more simple. So what you'll hear is really a fancy elaboration on this. As you listen to the full version now, try to keep in your ear, in your mind, this simple and yet beautiful harmonic progression with these held, long suspended notes while the other voice is moving, as you hear these moving statements of the theme, both right side up and upside down, in each hand going back and forth. At the beginning, this sequence. Now we get a different version of that with both of the hands flipped upside down. And then it breaks. As it comes to that beautiful ending. And now on to the three-parted mention. which is just this incredible burst of music. You know, it's so short, but absolutely jam-packed with this sweeping scale theme, either going up or upside down, kind of sweeping down. And lots of the times, also, you'll hear this fake-out version where you just hear the beginning, the scale, and then it starts over again, and then finally, right side up, the full version. So every time you hear the scale either going up or going down, it's another interrupting version of this theme, either in full or in this fake-out form. And you know, I made fun of this book earlier for saying Bach started composing or started his creative process by coming up with this excellent theme without making any attempt in the whole of the book to elaborate on what makes an excellent theme. And I just want to read an excerpt from another, more scholarly, well-regarded book, I suppose, The Keyboard Music of J.S. Bach by David Schulenburg, describing the themes used in these compositions, the inventions. Quote, "Unless one studies them, one may not realize the considerable differences between individual inventions. Subject range and length, from 2 beats or to 4 measures, some pieces fall into clearly articulated bi- or tripart designs, whereas others are through-composed. Several inventions treat their subjects more in the manner of the free sonata-style development than in fugal fashion, blah, 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 blah." Now, first of all, I promise that this quote is pretty boring, whatever voice, whatever kind of voice I read it in, but the real point is that it's opening with the wrong question. What's more interesting here is not all the little formal differences between these pieces, though those are interesting on another level, but rather their abstract similarities. And this is what I think lots of the scholarly literature leaves out. So a few things to note about this particular theme and how it relates to other Bach themes. First, there's this rhythmic element that you might not have noticed, but makes what seems like this simple scale at the beginning much more than just a scale, and that is that it starts not on the beat this way, but with this little breath, like it's picking up in the middle. And that's characteristic of lots and lots of Bach themes, including the two-part invention from earlier, as well as the third invention that we'll be hearing in just a bit. Secondly, it combines this very prosaic element, the scale, with something more characteristic, something unique, this part, which allows it to work in lots of different combinations because of this simple scale element at the beginning, and starting in lots of different places in the scale, not just, but sometimes, or in other places coming down, or... So Bach is able to throw this theme at us all over the place, sweeping up, sweeping down, in different voices, interrupting each other, and you never know when it's going to show up next, which is really important. For instance, my favorite part maybe is in the middle of this piece, where the middle of the three voices plays this theme going up, and then for the first time it extends it. So that's where it usually ends, but it repeats the last part. And while it's going, the bass voice interrupts it with the upside down version, but it's just a fake out, and then it starts over with the right side up version. So all together. And then the bass voice continues again. And now the middle voice here. And did you catch the bass voice interrupting, coming down? So... goes on to the end of that way. And now listen to Glenn Gould's version of this invention. It's only 45 seconds long, and I think it's absolutely exquisite. So fast, full of this relentless energy in typical Glenn Gould fashion. You know, every single note, very articulated, these fast ones in this way that I can't really imitate at all. And it just flies at you, challenging you to keep up. And unlike maybe my playing and many other Bach players, he doesn't make any effort to segment off or show you where the theme is starting. And you can take that either way. You know, I think it works really well. And what I feel when I listen is the sense of being totally overwhelmed, even if it's just for half a minute, by everything that's happening. For a contrast, let me play you the very beginning of this version by Andras Schiff, another pianist we heard last week. Much more considered and tender, I guess. A very different feeling. Every note is very carefully put in its place. It doesn't have this reckless feeling of the Gould. And I think both approaches work really well. I really like this one too, although I do prefer the boundless energy of Gould's version. Today I thought I'd leave you with a piece of a very different nature, though from the same group, the three-part inventions. This is the three-part invention in F minor, which in contrast to what you've already heard is a very slow, dark, and tragic piece. There are three main themes, main ingredients to this invention. Here's the first one. Second one is this painful, slow, chromatic descent. The third one is this evasive, more rhythmically and intervallically complex, with lots of strange and disorienting intervals and leaps. Each of these three themes gets switched around between the three voices. At the beginning, you'll just hear the first two of them, and then in the second phrase, you'll hear the main theme in the top voice, and the chromatic theme in the middle, and the third theme in the bass, so like this. Switched around. For instance, much later in the piece, you'll hear in the bass voice the first main theme, and in the soprano voice, chromatic, this way. So there's all these different combinations, but again, the most important is how these themes get extended, get stretched and strained almost beyond recognition. Like in the main theme, the intervals, which are pretty small here. We're not really jumping very far. They start to get wider and wider. You'll hear reaching up higher, and then which rhythmically and contour-wise is the same as that main theme, but obviously very different in context like this. And then later on in, I guess what you could think of, certainly what I think of, is kind of the climax of this piece when this stretching gets to its widest point of all, and we get this very expressive and dissonant leap in the bass voice, very dissonant to soprano. That's a basic overview of this piece. It starts out almost from nothing, just rising up from the depths and expands into this really emotionally wrought and almost disturbing climax, I think. And then toward the end, it returns back from where it came, just to this calm, serene emptiness. Let's hear it now to close out the episode today, played by me. And as usual, thanks for listening, and I'll put up some links from this episode on the website, www.samueljpost.com/podcast. For instance, like that terrible book I told you about earlier, which if you really want to read something totally non-enjoyable and waste your money, I would encourage you to buy. And let me know what you think. As usual, samueljpost@gmail.com or themusicpostpodcast@gmail.com. So enjoy, and I hope you'll join me next time on The Music Post. Here it is, Bach's three-part invention in F minor,